Inanna the Priestess, Part 3. From the book The Return of the Sexual Priestess by Jennifer Posada. You can find out more and hear the rest of this story at jenniferposada.com/Inanna. I arrived in Muru at night, and the cart driver completed his work by taking me to a side door of the great temple, where we were met by a night attendant, a lesser priest, whose duty it was to show me to my sleeping place. The hallways of the temple felt cold as the driver disappeared, and with him, the last of my former life. And the attendant ushered me down the passage with only the word, "Come." His face seemed hardened like the men who worked too many hours in the fields for such little compensation, and I hoped that all would not be like him. I was taken to an entry room, to the treasury, and I was asked to give my worldly goods as a first pledge to the temple and my life as a priestess. The jars, the bowls, the necklaces from my aunt and grandmother, the lapis my mother had given me the day before, all were placed on the stone altar to be, quote, cleansed before being added to the bounty of the other temple offerings. In the pocket of my gown remained the shell necklace. I began to be afraid. I was shown to a room where I could just make out stone platforms carved into the walls where other priestesses of my rank slept. I was shown mine and told I would be woken at dawn. I woke to the softest shuffle of bodies stirring, though none of the other priestesses who were awake spoke. I learned that we were to speak only at certain times. I learned that every aspect of our behavior was to be controlled as a sign of our deference to the temple. I was to come to understand that it was believed that the more we could make ourselves look and act just exactly like the others, not standing out in any way, the more we would be rewarded and move up the ranks of the temple hierarchy. Just two generations before, women had been the highest authority of the temple. The high priestesses ruled all. But now it had been made temple law that a priest would rule over even the higher-ranking priestesses and have final say over all matters. That morning I slid my shell necklace into a crack in the stone of my sleeping platform, and it was wise that I did. For that very day, while the other girls were taken to their studies, I was taken to my purification rituals. I had not been prepared for these rituals and felt quickly like a caged animal when they asked me to remove my robe dress, standing naked before the three older priestesses, who then told me to lean my head over the sacred stone basin of water, where they sheared off my hair with sharp stones. They placed my dress and some of my hair into a temple fire and told me this was symbolic of leaving behind the person I had been and everything about my life that had come before. In disrobing, you pledge yourself to the temple. You leave behind the family you have known, and you allow your personality to burn in the cleansing fire so that you can achieve the great wisdom that only comes from this dissolution of self. While it may seem harsh to leave behind this former life, only in doing so can you achieve the true freedom all seek. I knew it was all right to leave behind the family I had known. I knew they had never been my true family to begin with. But I could feel that it was wrong to leave behind the wisdom of the river and the voice of the reeds. the secret stories of the animal creatures that made no words but knew all. I knew there were many things about myself that it was better not to leave behind, and that this was not freedom. I also knew, however, that I could not turn and leave the temple at that moment. I would not be received again by my family, and the choices for women with no family were of servitude, and usually unsafe servitude at that. I decided to see if I could live within the restrictions placed before me and still thrive inside of me. As I thought these things, tears streamed down my face while I hung upside down over the basin and the priestesses tore at my hair. This was a blessing, they told me. Now I could be cleansed of impurities from my path. Now I would take the shining path of the priestess. I watched the tears slip into the ritual water, and I didn't make a sound. I was cold, and I was hungry, as I watched my hair fall like feathers to the water. For 2 years, I was in preparation with the other younger priestesses in training. In those years, I became very good at appearing to follow every rule, while inside attempting to remember the deeper knowing I had been born with. I discovered when I could have free moments, when I could hold the hands of my priestess sisters in the garden or on festival days. I relished my moments under the sky, or when one of the chants I learned took me to the blessed realms within. But usually I had to perform the chants in a specific way that didn't allow me to have that access. I had to chant as instructed, as was written in the accepted scriptures, not as I would have been guided to inside of me. By the time I was 16, I had excelled in my learning and was taken one day to the highest priestesses. I was told that I would not be moving on to the standard priestess duties with the other girls my age that I had lived with for 2 years. I was told I would be placed in a special program with somewhat older girls. I was told I had shown the signs of the sexual priestess.